Hey, welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about programming, development, and design through the lens of amazing books, chapter by chapter. My name is John, and I am one of your guides today in venturing into the world of extreme programming by Kent Beck. And I am joined, as always, by the incredible JP. Hey, JP, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I will be your other guide. I will be a co-guide for this adventure that we are about
to
go on.
Have a glass of wine.
So how's it going?
It's going really good, man. I feel like I'm finding a good pace and balance of work and life and challenge and not overworking myself, which is like, it's really hard to do in the world of programming and running an agency and everything else going on in life, buying a house and craziness. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat. I'm on a little staycation right now, which I feel like kind of bothers people when I tell people I'm taking time off and not going somewhere. That being said, I have traveled to Europe a handful of times, and I've been to other states, so I know what it's about. But I will say that this has been maybe one of the most relaxing vacations or time periods off that I've had, just because I feel like with all the hustle and bustle of work, it's really easy to get into the motion of things, and it feels like life is moving really fast. Mm-hmm. But to just be able to like wake up, take your time, make breakfast, go to the gym, do all the stuff that you would normally do, but sort of let life slow down, I think I've been able to like really just recharge and mentally be able to like not feel like life is moving too fast and I can't do anything about it, which has been like great for me. So I've been doing all the things. I haven't done anything crazy. I've driven my car through the canyons. I've like just gone to the gym. I feel like I'm finding that balance and finding the things I enjoy in life again. Mm-hmm. Which has just been really great. I feel like that's important to do.
And I just absolutely.
I don't want to go on like some trip and then feel like I'm tired from the trip and that I need a vacation from the vacation. I wanted to go back to work completely recharged and re-energized. And I feel like thus far I have accomplished that.
That's awesome. Great. How long is this time off?
Just like 2 weeks. But I will say I timed it on 4th of July, which I didn't realize when I put my time off originally. So technically, with that, I've probably have done maybe like 8 business days, which is like less time than...
I see what you're saying. So that was kind of cool to do it that way. I feel like I'm so with you on the idea of like taking a day off or a couple days off and just staying home. Because I feel like millennials, we so like fetishize travel. And it's like this incredible thing. And I've done my fair share of travel. I've done South America and Asia, and it's incredible. And everybody should do some stints of travel. But like I haven't had a vacation that I felt like was like actually restorative and restful in forever. Like the most recent vacation I had was 6 days on the back of my bicycle, which was an incredible experience, but like I came home exhausted and mm-hmm. like I still haven't caught up from that trip. So I think it's like a good little nugget in there, which is like, don't feel like if you have 4 days off work that you have to cram it with activities or projects or travel. I think sometimes it's important to like let yourself have breathing room and space. But anyway, let's jump into the meat of this content. I think that's awesome, man. We are going through, we're actually going to blow through a couple different chapters today in Extreme Programming by Kent Beck. That's what we're working through today. Last episode, we kind of just introduced the book and the whole high level concepts of what Extreme Program is all about. And I finally, for myself, I figured out why this book feels kind of like silly to me or lame with this like extreme programming title. And I totally figured out what it is. It reminds me of going to church in the 90s. Like when I was a kid, my family was super religious and they would always try to take me to these youth groups that like tried to be really cool. And they'd get on stage and they'd be like, you know what's cool? Helping the elderly. You know what's sexy is modesty. And I feel like that's kind of how this book feels a bit. It's like, you know what's extreme? Is having work-life balance. That's what's extreme.
You know what's extreme? Communication.
Exactly. But at the same time, like it really is an extreme concept in our totally whack like industry. Like our industry has no work-life balance. Our industry is like the stereotypes of our industry is really poor communication between business and tech sides. So like I get it. It is extreme. Something about it just like still feels a bit silly. All that said, I'm totally loving this book and really excited to dig into what we're talking about today. So let's kind of give a quick overview. So we're going through chapters 2, 3, and 4, which sounds like way too much to cover, but chapter 2 was literally two pages, and chapter three was literally three pages. So let's kind of sum up chapters two and three before we get to the meat of this. What do you think, JP?
Yeah, that sounds good, because chapter four is where it starts to get real interesting. So chapter two was called Learning to Drive, and in a sentence, it was basically like, when you learn to drive, you don't try to oversteer and overcorrect. Driving is all about making frequent small corrections. You don't wait to find out that you're going in the wrong direction.
Hopefully not.
you just make that change. And so programming is kind of like that, because not only does code change, requirements change, teams change, everything about our jobs as software engineers changes, and we have to be able to make little adjustments to make sure that, you know, things are going smoothly. So
right. And it's this like continuative process of like the back and forth between your eyes and your hands and the road to kind of keep your car in the lane. And to me, this is such a great metaphor, because it's such a gentle process. Like, if you are trying to force driving and like force the wind and nature to like to your way, like, you're going to have a really bad time, and everyone in the car with you is going to have a really bad time, and everybody's going to feel that tension. But if you kind of let the bumps of the road happen and you kind of let yourself go with the curves, like, it's going to be a lot better for you. So I think overall, this metaphor is kind of a metaphor for how programming and working as a programmer should work. It's like this continuous feedback. And I think all the way down to code, like leaving your code green and making small changes and allowing it to work with continuous feedback. And I think all the way up to working with stakeholders or your team, like letting it be this natural digression and like positive feedback loops that kind of softly guide things back and forth, which I really like that metaphor. So that was chapter two. It was just literally that one metaphor, and he didn't even like connect it to the content. He
just
he just kind of told the story, which like was interesting, because like I totally got it. I totally got the point he was trying to make, which was great. And then chapter three, he talks about like the differences between values, principles, and practices, and like what those things mean and how they connect. It was like, it was more of just like an idea of thinking about the whys behind the things you're doing and what the difference between values and principles and practices was. It was interesting. It was just like a super quick overview of that. So you want to walk us through that, JP? What is values, practices versus principles?
Wow, I thought you summed it up pretty well, and I was gonna try to lean on you for this, because it just seemed so conceptual,
yeah,
and kind of abstract. But I could try in a couple sentences. I have a couple bullet points. So
yeah, let's knock out the bullet points.
Yeah, so values are the roots of things we like and don't like in a situation, which is what we're gonna be talking about primarily in chapter four. Practices are evidence of those values. And principles bridge the gap between values and practices, which all seems kind of hard to understand. But I think as we go through chapters 4, 5, and 6 respectively, I think we'll be able to get a better understanding of what these things really mean. So chapter 4 is going to be about values, and then I think chapter 5 is about principles, and I think chapter 6 is about practices.
Right. And so it's the idea, it's like starting with the foundation, like the motivations, the whys behind what we're doing is kind of what it is. It's like, one of my values is to be healthy, but one of my practices is jogging twice a week. So it's like, that's the kind of differences between those three. So like, what is the deeper level motivation behind the practices and things you do? And then within practices, there's this idea of like principles that kind of bridge values and practices. It makes sense. But on that subject, let's jump into the core values of what he's talking about, of what these values are within extreme programming. And then that's really the root of this episode, is what are these five key values to software development in our modern world? And I'm just going to list those off real quick. So number one, communication. 2, simplicity. 3, feedback. 4, courage. And 5, respect. So these are the five key values embodied in extreme programming. You know what's extreme? Communication. So let's jump right into communication. This whole chapter had some great like thoughts that really connected a lot back. And so I'm excited to go through this stuff.
Cool. Yeah. So here's the little snippet intro to communication. And I feel like a lot of this is going to seem very obvious, but some of these quotes are just, you know, too good to not just read and have a little mini discussion about. So this is the quote about communication. It's, quote, "When you encounter a problem, ask yourselves if the problem was caused by a lack of communication. What communication do you need now to address the problem? What communication do you need to keep yourself out of trouble in the future? End quote. And so this is, it's literally just about communication. And I feel like teams these days really need that kind of, need good communication. Oftentimes, at the end of sprint, we have these things called retrospectives or sprint retros for those of you who are familiar with techie, agile, hip, cool words. And what a retro is basically a reflection of the past sprint. What went well, what didn't go well, what we should keep doing. And I feel like communication comes up a lot in all three of those things. So it's something that we are all cognizant of. And when it's good, it's good. You know, it's like continue communicating with each other. Sometimes sprints go really well because it felt like a well-oiled machine and everyone was talking to each other and, you know, there were no blind spots and things like that. People were helping each other out really well. Oftentimes this is good when someone new joins the team and their retro feedback is like, hey, thank you so much for like communicating with me and like walking me through the code base and this and that. But when it's bad, it's bad. Sometimes there's times in retro where it's like, hey, what happened to the communication there? Like, you know, we had a couple holes here and there and it wasn't that great. And I think it's just, this is like, it seems so obvious, but it's like, it's just something that needs to be good for a team to be good. I don't know. Yeah. I fell apart there towards the end.
No, not at all. I think that a team can't be good without effective communication. And like, it feels like it should go on a poster, which is silly, but it really is just so true. So I wanted to actually ask like some brass tacks in your organization that you work in day to day, like the communication, what are the main touch points of communication, like on a specific issue or throughout your workflow? And then which of those do you feel like are really productive and which do you feel like are maybe over communication? And is there a spot where there's some over communication in your organization? Because you work in an office with a bunch of developers all in one physical location, which is way different than how I work, which is distributed. Everyone's remote.
Yeah. So there's different, Dan, communication. I just realized you opening up that question sort of makes me realize how many different forms of communication that we have,
yeah.
Which is interesting to me because now that we got acquired by Opendoor, we're still growing and we're still trying to figure things out. So things primarily are communicated via Slack,
wow.
which is maybe may or may not be the best way, but it worked so well for us when we were like a small team of 40 people in our office and like 9 engineers. Like if we wanted to announce something to our engineering team, all we had to do is like ping Slack channel and be like, mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, on call is now blah, 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 this and that.
Right.
But now that we're such a much larger organization and there's different stakeholders and people at Opendoor have to know these things, you know, now like email is starting to be like more permanent. It's like, it's less ephemeral because, you know, you do an at channel or an at here and it's like really easy to miss something.
Yeah, it is.
So I think a lot of our communication now is we're figuring it out and we're figuring it out what works best for us. But I think email seems a lot more permanent, but then it's like, you know, we get blasted with emails from, I don't know. It's very hard. I guess that's sort of my answer for that. But like, yeah. My question to you is like, how does your organization communicate? Because I assume everyone's remote, right?
So yeah, like, everyone's remote.
Do you have like a daily stand up over like Google Hangouts or like, yeah. what happens to like, to make sure that everyone's sort of on the same page?
Yeah, this is definitely something like we're still learning as we grow and figuring out. So everything, I always try to prioritize asynchronous first, meaning like anybody can respond at any time and not synchronous communication. So we do very, very little, if any, real-time meetings, like video chats, phone calls, or anything like that, or even Slack where I expect you to respond. Like the way we use Slack is extremely passive. It's like 4-hour kind of replies or even longer sometimes. But so the main touch points of communication we have internally is definitely Slack. We have a channel for every client project, which is just useful for like FYIs, like, hey, staging has just been deployed or whatever those things are. Like, and we have a couple bots that kind of push like a few things into those client Slack channels, which is really nice. So Slack is there. But the main things we have is we have a twice weekly stand-up. So it's on Tuesdays and Sundays is when it sends out. And it's basically the main stand-up questions. What have you completed? What are you working on next? Any obstacles? And that's shared with everyone on the team. We tried doing it daily, but then across time zones, like it feels very useless and weird because it's like, you know, some of the team responds at 8 a.m., some of the team responds at 8 p.m. So now it's just twice a week, which is a good cadence for us, which feels really nice. And so it's those three questions. What were you working on? What are you working on next? And any blockers? And that's shared between everybody. So that's the main touch point of how everybody knows what everybody's working on. And then the main tool we use is GitHub for absolutely everything. And so if you look at an average GitHub issue for us, there's probably 18 replies back and forth. Like, we use that very much to like hash out different mockups or pseudocode or different approaches there. So I would say, like, before the work starts, we really define the work back and forth in GitHub. Like, everybody has time to sleep on it, think through the best approach, and we kind of at least get two people to agree on an approach for a larger issue or whether it needs to be split up and what that looks like. But that conversation happens on GitHub, where there's like a place for that conversation about that feature. And then the next main touch point would be, once there is probably like half the work completed, we open a work in progress pull request and request a review midway. This is for like a larger pull request, a larger project. So then that's like the second point of like, are we going in the right direction? Does this direction make sense? Do we need to go back and rework our direction? And then of course, like the final PR, the thing that we don't do. So that's what we do. Those are pretty much the only three touch points, is like before, midway, and then when it's basically done for review. But what we don't do, and what I want to start doing, is some kind of post-mortem and some type of sprint scheduling, because everything just gets kind of done when it comes in and we kick it out when it goes out, and there's no like formal planning sprint phase at all. It's really more of like this kind of just ongoing, I'm always kind of doing the planning and back and forth, and then we just kind of like dig into the work and we dig into it. But I think having some kind of a formal post-mortem would be really good. And then the only other communication I do is I very intentionally meet in a real-time video meeting at least 30 minutes with every developer once a month. So we talk through, you know, frustrations of working together, what's going well, what's going bad, but it's only one-on-one. And I feel like there could be a lot of value in maybe doing it like every 2 months or once a month with the whole team at once, which would be really good. But right now it's just once a month and one-on-one, which a lot of good things come from that. So that's how our internal communication works, but that's really it. There's very few actual touch points. We rarely ever touch email, almost never. It's just Slack, and GitHub would be the number one tool.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like it's definitely possible to have over communication. But then it's definitely possible to have under communication, and you really want to have that good balance. One example of this really quick is we were having an issue where we didn't know where to leave comments on for feedback for features. And what I mean by that is, so you have like the Jira ticket, and then you have like a pull request on GitHub. Mm-hmm. And so it goes through code review, and that's all fine. So obviously code review goes on the pull request. But then we have our designers also go in and then go through a pass, right? And so they'll be like, oh, hey, actually, can we change the animation to do this? And so we don't know. We were having it in different places. So sometimes it would be like in the issue, and sometimes it would be straight in the pull request, because the pull request has like links that you can, like, usually we want to fill out a pull request to have like links so that you could test these things out for our designers and our QA people. So sometimes our designers would either put it in like the pull request, or sometimes they'd put it in the ticket. And that was because we didn't have a defined way of doing it. And then we recently hired a QA person earlier this year. And so he puts all of his feedback in the pull request. But the thing is that sometimes if the designers put the feedback in the ticket, it can be missed, because you know, they might not see it, or they can put it in the pull request. And if our QA person's looking at the ticket, they might not see that.
And sometimes
something
like
should be a different
request
way.
Comment can be missed. Like if five or six people are commenting, like one part of the thread gets lost, or you can't see that there's discrepancies. Like designer A says red, designer B sees blue. And it's sometimes hard to see like open deliverables once it moves out of the like issue or ticket phase. It's really hard to see that once it's in a pull request. And there's like an odd line between like, do we open up a new ticket for changes to this pull request and close the pull request? Like, so what did you guys kind of solve that, or is that just still kind of an open pain point?
I think we decided to put everything in the ticket, because the ticket is like, these are the requirements.
That makes sense.
And so what we try to do is we try to edit the original post of the ticket so that like it's all just there. And so you can see, you know, as someone who's like QAing it, or if our product manager wants to like go over the recs again, he could be like, this is the defined thing. Let's stick to this as the source of truth, because oftentimes we'd go back and forth and argue over like, what's the source of truth?
Yeah.
And somewhere along down the line, it was like, oh, this actually changed here. And then the worst is like when people have conversations in person and then that's not reflected anywhere. And so you,
yeah,
and,
like
and so
over
you don't know.
Slack or, right. Okay, or other conversations. Yeah. What's interesting about the idea of defining it in the ticket and having that be the source of truth, it almost ends up then that Jira ends up being the product definition, like what is the deliverable? And then GitHub is the conversation about execution and like maybe styles and nuances within execution. I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you use to communicate, whether it's smoke signals or phone calls or emails or whatever, as long as you have a system that you use consistently and everybody understands what the system is, I think that's more important than like specific ways around it. And I think a couple other tips within communication, we can move on to some other topics, but one that I found incredible value in is have something to look at or talk about. Like it's really easy to have conversations that just go in circles because we're actually not on the same page. And so like somebody put together some kind of mock-up, even if the mock-up is wrong, at least we have the wrong, looking at the wrong thing and talking about why it's wrong still helps everyone get alignment on where we should go. Or just like write some pseudocode, like come up with a fake database table and then talk about it. But it's really hard to have communication around something that's very ephemeral or just like some kind of loose concept. It's like, we want to optimize notifications and you have a conversation around that. Like it's very hard to do so. It's better to come up with, here's my plan to optimize notifications. Here's my 4 or 5 bullet points and some pseudocode. And then people are like, oh, and can I actually get alignment and have a productive conversation? Have you guys found that like sometimes if something's ill-defined, like the conversation just goes nowhere?
Oh yeah. It's you just have meetings that it's like somehow it was an hour long, but nothing was actually said.
And I think the biggest problems with those is we all came to the meeting or we started down this path with no one like was the owner on it and no one like really defined anything. No one came up with the wrong idea or the bad idea or the decent idea that needs to be refined. So I think that's a really big one, especially with stakeholders, because like they can be non-technical and you're just talking about completely different things until you're actually like looking at something. And I think the other one is, speaking of stakeholders, is just trying to include everyone in your communication and key touch points. It's really important and it's such a pain in the ass, especially with non-technical stakeholders, but it's really worth it. So one small way we do this in our agency is we actually have every single week, no matter what, there's an email that goes out on Monday that lists out all the closed PRs and what they accomplished in plain English, all the open issues for the week and what we're going to accomplish, and all the closed issues for the week and what they were in plain English. And like, I guess that's our retrospective, if any, because each developer who did the PR or closed the issue has to kind of write out in plain English so that someone who doesn't understand code understands like what happened and why we did it. And that's a really good practice that we've been in. And they know on Monday mornings, at least they know exactly what's going on with their project. And the thing that we've been doing more and more now is when we have a mock-up or a prototype or like, at the 99% phase, so like there's 99% of the work to do, but we've defined the 1% of like what it means. We will share that screenshot and just a quick email with the client like, hey, this is what we're thinking about building. You told us you wanted this. This is what we're thinking about building. This is kind of how it works in 1 or 2 sentences. Do you have any thoughts? And I found so much value in just those quick replies from clients like, what does this mean? And it's like, oh man, that opened up so much more understanding in this. So like it is a lot more work and it really takes a lot of time to make sure all stakeholders are involved, but ultimately you'll save a lot of time in the long run and just build better work. Like we can't build this stuff in a bubble. We need to communicate and include everyone we can in that process.
Yeah, totally. I think that email that gets sent out that lists everything, I feel like that's one of those things where people like see it and they read it and they don't realize how much they value it. But like, let's say you stopped doing that, they'd be like, whoa, what happened to those emails?
And what's so funny is that's exactly like what I was thinking, because it takes us like 2 or 3 hours a week to do this for all our clients. And so I'm like, is this even valuable? And I can't bill that time. Like that's just eating time up from the agency. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to just not send it on a Monday and see if anyone notices, because are they even, because half the time they don't even respond. Mm-hmm. But then like instantly, it was like 3 o'clock on the Monday, like every single client was like, hey, where's my update this week? It's like, obviously it has value. And I think the other point of that too is like when we have touchdown calls or when they get an invoice, like they have more context around what's been going on, especially in a remote agency like this with multiple stakeholders. It's easy for one of our clients to not hear from us for 2 weeks just because we're heads down working on stuff. And it's really important to like continuously involve them. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So moving in from communication, I knew that would be a big one. We're going to move on to simplicity here. So the idea of simplicity, which is the second major value of extreme programming. And I love this quote from the book. It says, to make a system simple enough to gracefully solve only today's problems is hard work. And so it's like simplicity being really hard work. But I really think that's super true and a very eloquent way to put it.
Yeah, this sort of takes the same pragmatic approach that we've been talking about for the last, I don't know, three different books, which seems to be a nice theme. It seems that it's just, here's how you should do it. You should just do it in the most simple way possible. Like, how do we solve the problem at hand? And the way I like to think of it is like, how can we provide value to the customer without compromising on their experience and without over-engineering a solution? Mm. So I feel like a lot of times I'll be in planning meetings and we're speccing out a feature that we don't even know if we're going to use, you know, like in the long run. It's just right. sort of something that you want to test. And it's really easy to be like, oh, well, then what if we wanted to do this in the future and do that and this and that and this? And earlier in my career, I would sort of entertain those things. But now I try to nip conversations in the bud from going too far. It's mm-hmm. good to like understand like where things might possibly go, but when you go too far into it, it ends up being wasted time. And there have definitely been scenarios where I'm just like, let's just ship something that isn't a shitty experience, and it lets us, you know, gather some analytics, and then we can reevaluate the situation after that. And sometimes it's great because it's like, hey, we found out that, you know, the analytics show that this feature is actually a piece of crap. Let's just dump it and mm-hmm. dispose of this code. And that's great because we didn't have to invest all this time in it. And sometimes, you know, that's it. Sometimes simplicity is the answer, because let's say that sometimes a feature does work out, you know, then you gather more data and realize, hey, this is actually not as complex as we needed it to be, and this is all we need. And so I don't know, I really do enjoy taking a pragmatic approach on things and not trying to like look too far ahead into the future and try to over engineer a solution that might not need all these, you know, doohickeys and gadgets and cool technologies that you think that you need.
Yeah. Sometimes though, like it's so hard to this idea of solving today's problems now and not compromising their experience. Like not over engineering. The balance that's hard for me to strike is also writing quality code that's well tested and that's secure, like all these other considerations. But ultimately, simple doesn't mean that it's ugly on the back end. Simple doesn't mean that it's insecure or unstable or unreliable. Simple means that there's just less complexity. That's like the definition of what that means. And so sometimes it's hard to find that line between quality and simple and like limited scope and ugly, messy implementation. And that's like the balance that I struggle with sometimes, because I want to deliver as much value on the front end to my end users as possible with as little engineering overhead. And walking that line between proper test coverage and thinking through a design pattern that makes sense for something is really hard to also like continue shipping. And I guess this is something that just kind of happens with time. Like I know that I'm getting better at it and our team is getting better at it, but sometimes that's really hard. And I just feel like to try to cut through the noise of what simplicity is and how to do it, I feel like just breaking up the feature into smaller things. Like just think about, instead of this new batch of features that solves 10 things, just pick one and execute it really well. Execute that one feature. And I feel like overall, you're going to have such a more sustainable and maintainable system. But that's really what it comes down to, is having the courage, which we'll talk about in a minute, having the courage and like honesty to just be like, well, what if this didn't do 6 things? What if it just did one thing? Or like if you're building a messaging tool, like do we need real-time messaging, which adds a lot of engineering complexity? Or is it okay to just have a button that says check for new messages? Like do we really need to deal with WebSockets and push notifications and all these different things? Like maybe it's okay to just have pull the refresh right now for messaging, just because that increases the simplicity by an order of magnitude. So I guess like I want to talk a little bit about what types of simplicity there are. Like, of course, limiting feature sets is one. A user experience interface, like making the front end, like don't do drag and drop maybe. Like what is the thing on the front end you can do that's simpler? Is there any other like easy paths to defining whether or not it's simple? Like what are the things that to you feel complex? This sounds way too complex. Like this is not simple. What are the kind of red flags in your mind?
We could literally have an episode for each of these things. I think another thing that comes to mind when I think about simplicity versus complexity is code itself. Because there have been times where I pushed back on something because I knew that like that might be over designing. Mm. Like, hey, this would actually be a cleaner solution if you refactored it to do XYZ. It's kind of like saying like, hey, you should break these out to oversimplify this example, it's sort of like, hey, you should break these out into methods. And in time, there have been times where I've pushed back and said like, hey, you know, this code's probably going to be deprecated and deleted in like a month or so. I'm just going to leave it in line for all intents and purposes because like it works, the test passed, and that code, and it did end up being deleted. And I was like really happy when it finally did and it was deprecated, which was great. But I do think that just refactoring sometimes for like good clean code in scenarios specifically like that, where you know things are going to be deprecated and deleted, it's the simple solution is just to leave it alone and not spend engineering effort and hours refactoring to something that will look cleaner, but again, does not provide value to the customer, right? So like, sure, the code could be like groomed, but it's not necessarily like this crazy thing that's hard to understand or,
interesting. You know. Yeah, and that's really simplicity in execution, like in the code, not necessarily the initial planning phase. I think, yeah, definitely we could do a whole episode on simplicity. That said, the next big value in extreme programming is feedback. So let's talk through the idea of feedback. I almost feel like this is just a sub bullet point of communication, and I'm surprised that it has its own section. Like, I don't understand why it's not just part of feedback, but ultimately, feedback is really important, of course.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that. There was something weird about this, about feedback as a category that I couldn't quite pin down, and I think you nailed it. It's like, it feels like a subcategory of communication because you can't really have communicate or feedback without communication. That would be weird.
And so much of what we talked about, like PR review and issue conversation, is like, it's all feedback. So it's interesting. Like, there's not much difference in the categories.
Yeah, so I think Kent Beck mentions that like all of these should be working together, like synergistically kind of a thing where the sum is greater than the parts. But for feedback, I think we could just sum it up as there's a couple of bullet points about how he mentions feedback takes form. And so these are the bullet points. Feedback can be in the form of opinions about an idea, yours or your teammates. It could be about how the code looks when you implement the idea, whether tests were easy to write, whether tests were easy to run, how the idea works in practice when it's actually been deployed. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's just like a continuous feedback loop. And I think this sort of goes back to the chapter 2 about small, tiny increments, is because you communicate, you know, you have feedback and you execute on the feedback. So based on such feedback, you know, maybe we need to go a little bit left or we need to go a little bit right. We need to make these small, tiny changes based on, you know, the feedback that we've received and to keep the wheel moving. And this is sort of like, I think this is the point of like our sprint retros, is that like, hey, we reflected on the last 2 weeks. What did we do that we should keep doing and what should we stop doing? And, you know, little things like that. And I think it's all part of just a healthy engineering and product and design organization.
One thing that I want to call attention to in the context of feedback is including all the feedback you can. So that's from end users, from the stakeholders, from the engineering team, and even through automated tools. Like the bullet point here was whether or not tests run. Like your CI running, your continuous integration running is feedback. Even your linter is feedback. And I think any opportunity for all the feedback you can get, whether it's more structured through Google Analytics, or whether it's kind of anecdotal of just kind of seeing sentiment from your users on Twitter, all that feedback is really important to consider and it, like, have a system around continuously integrating and listening to that feedback. And then I have adopted recently, I actually learned this in a startup I've been working with, this, it's called the 99-51 framework. And I alluded to it earlier, and I'm going to link it in the show notes. But it's this idea of having set feedback touch points. And we've been starting to kind of soft implement this in our agency as well, which is you get feedback from someone else when there's 99% of the work to do, like at the point when you have almost the whole project to do, at halfway through the project, and then when you're at the last 1% of the work to be completed. And include as many people as you can in each of those main touch points. And I've found a lot of value in like having the mental awareness and just the ability to like, okay, I'm halfway through, I need to stop and get some feedback now, make sure I'm not kind of like, you know, self-tricking myself into going down a wrong path here and making sure that this is a good approach. And I found a lot of value in this kind of framework. And I'll link that in the show notes, which is like having just these continuous touch points. That really leads us to this next concept of courage. And this seems like a really odd topic to be kind of a value in computer programming. I wouldn't expect that to be one, but here's the quote from the book. So, courage is a primary value without counterbalancing values is dangerous. Doing something without regard for the consequences is not effective teamwork. The courage to speak truths, pleasant or unpleasant, fosters communication and trust. The courage to disregard failing solutions and seek new ones encourages simplicity. The courage to seek real, concrete answers create feedback. And I feel like courage really plays into all these other topics of simplicity, communication, and feedback. Like having the courage to come in and say, I don't think we should build 20 features. I think we should build one. Having the courage to say in a feedback, this code is not great. And here's why I think this code could be better. Or here's what we can improve to make this idea better. And it's really about being honest and being straightforward and like having the respect for each other, which we'll talk about respect more in a second, to really like speak truth in a respectful way, and having that courage is really, really important.
Yeah. I think the subtext here, in my opinion, is like being a team player, like having the courage to be a team player, because we all have our opinions on how something should be. It's like, oh no, that should be a class. No, that should be a module. And you know, people might have other opinions. And sometimes it's about like taking a step backwards and being like, hey, you know what? You're actually right. Like, we should design it in such and such way. And sometimes it's like, hey, no, I really think that if we don't do it this way, it's not going to scale. And just having, you know, these kinds of conversations. Yeah. And it ties in with communication a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Because communication and feedback to come up with a simple solution. I feel like all of these things tie in so well together. But in my opinion, courage is all just about like being a team player. You may disagree or agree with your teammates, but that doesn't mean that you can't come to like a solution, and that doesn't mean that you shouldn't speak up. Yeah. It's about, you know, saying when you think things are right and when they're wrong.
Yeah. And this, for me, it's a huge topic trying to run an agency and live a reasonable life, and one that I feel like is a life that I find a lot of value and joy in. And it really comes back to the book, It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work, book written by Jason Fried at Basecamp. And for me, what courage means is having the courage to set boundaries. Like when a client is pushing, I need this by tomorrow, you have to reply at 2 a.m. It's having the courage and self-respect and honesty to say like, I can't make that happen. Like, I'm sorry. Even if like you physically could make it happen, you know that like your life is not going to be sustainable if you allow that to happen. And it's having the courage to be actually very honest and transparent about scope and cost and timelines. I was on a conversation with a client yesterday, and they were really desperate to understand like, what's the order of magnitude cost? Like, give me a ballpark number. How many weeks is this going to get out? Is it 3 weeks or is it 12? And I had to honestly say, like, at this moment, this is so ill-defined. I don't know if it's 3 weeks or 12 weeks. This could be 20 weeks. This could be 1 week. I have no idea. I don't have enough information. And I felt really dumb saying that. And I felt like I should know whether it's 3 or 12 weeks, like have a gut, but I had no gut on it because it was just very uncharted territory. And it was a huge pivot for the code base. So and I think the inherentness of the, like, it was so unknown that I said, err on the side of 12 weeks because I have no idea. I haven't dug into it. It's probably going to be more complex, but like, it took a lot of courage for myself to like be willing to admit that I had no idea, because it's very easy to be like, yeah, it's going to be about 12 weeks. I'm sure we can get it done in that timeline. It's not going to be that complex, but it's like, you have to be courageous enough to speak up and like set boundaries for yourself and be honest. And like, it's really hard to do. And it's really hard to do without coming off like an asshole or like you don't know what you're talking about. And it's just, you have to like keep yourself being human. And it's been that's been my number one challenge in running an agency in the last year or so, is working that courage muscle and getting that up to set those boundaries and being really honest when I don't know or whatever those things are. So I think like this is a really good value to try to own.
Yeah. And it sounds like the other side of the coin of that story, which sort of reminds me of personal experience too, is like the other side of courage is like fear. Like, you need to have courage because things are scary. You don't want to go back to the stakeholder and be like, ooh, you know what? Like, that might take 12 to 14 weeks when, you know, I know you wanted it in 9. But yeah, I remember early on in when I was working at Open Listings, I would be like scared to be like, hey, this feature that I need to deliver is, I think we need to cut scope. And then oftentimes I'd be like, I think we need to cut scope, but I can ship these features. And I would always be so scared to even just bring that up, because I would be like, I'm going to get in trouble, or like, they're going to think I'm not working as hard as I should be, or something like that, right? But like, you need to have the courage to be able to speak up and communicate what can be done. And I think that's why courage is like the value, is because because fear is on the other side of that, and it's easy to be really apprehensive to even communicate anything.
So the last topic here is respect and the idea of respect and respecting each other. So that is the last value. And the quote from the book here is, if team members don't care about each other and what they are doing, extreme programming won't work. If members of a team don't care about a project, nothing can save it. Every person whose life is touched by software development has equal value as a human being. No one is intrinsically worth more than anyone else. That's the end of the quote there. I think this totally happens in our industry, is that like us as engineers and designers, we feel like, well, I'm the designer. An engineer doesn't know what I know. And engineers are like, oh, that designer doesn't know shit because he doesn't understand the implementation. Or you know, she just doesn't understand like how complicated that kind of a menu system would be on the front end. And like, and even like all the way to business stakeholders, like, oh, this business stakeholder doesn't understand the complexities of our systems and they just want to add this new feature in a week and they don't understand. And I feel like this lack of respect really permeates, especially based on values and skills, like technical versus non-technical. And business people are like, well, I'm going to let the nerds finish this we're done with this meeting. We're 10 minutes in. Let's let the nerds finish all the detail here. They can solve the problems. And so I think you have a much more productive environment and you're willing to have these other tenants really work well if there's a fundamental respect for everybody, that everybody has equal value, from the quality assurance person to the end user. Like, there is empathy and respect across the board. Your world will be so much more productive and just enjoyable. Treat people as people. Don't be a dick.
Yeah, it's all about like teamwork, right? Like, you should be courageous and you should communicate, but you shouldn't be a dick about it. You should still respect other people's opinions, and hopefully they respect yours too. And yeah, it just seems like all five of these values. We should go through them really quick as a quick reminder. So they were communication, simplicity, feedback, courage, and respect. Mm-hmm. And I think together, when you practice these things very extremely, you end up with just a really healthy organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things in respect is talk about the work, not about the person. So like, oh, your code sucks, or you always write code this way. Like, talk about the thing that you're trying to move forward. So like, this might be better if, like, is such a better way to frame feedback in. I think the other thing is like, recognize that there's rarely a wrong approach, just like a different approach, especially in software. Like, there is 2,000 ways to skin a cat. There's so many ways to implement every single feature, and it's okay that it's not done the way that you would implement it. That doesn't mean that it's wrong necessarily. And I think the other thing in general, to just show general respect, especially in like code review and feedback, is like, talk about what you like about it. Like, what did they do right? And try that old compliment sandwich concept when you're talking and having conversations with people. It's like, here's what's good about what we're going on right now. Here's what's really shitty about what's going on, and like, wrap it up with something good. And I think that goes a long way to try to keep, those are like actual takeaways you can implement now that'll help you try to keep good respect for other humans and try to remind yourself to remember, like, they have value. Like, let's talk about the work. Let's keep things productive. And I think those are really good tips.
Yeah, that's really funny you mentioned that, is like compliments in code review. And I feel like our office, our Open Listings office, we foster this culture of sometimes leaving little comments like that in our code reviews. Like, you know, just drop in like a, hey, nice tests, or like, you know, 100 emoji. And I don't know how this started, but it seems like a lot of the times we'll leave little comments like that are just like, hey, this is good shit right here. You know, just a little fire emoji goes a long way.
It really does. Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, maybe it's not professional, quote unquote, or whatever, but I do think that it really can pick up your team members too. Cause, you know, like, if you bombard someone with a code review and all you're doing is saying, you know, the subtext is, hey, this sucks, like, that's not cool. Right. Mm-hmm. So you need to pick your people up too, and not just, you know, shit on them.
Yeah. Oh, and this idea of respect too, it's like holding people's skill sets in regard. So if there is that designer, like, being willing to tell them, like, you know what, you're the designer, you probably would know better in this case. And being willing to like have someone's skill set kind of usurp your own, like, they probably do know better. And it's important to like have that kind of like, well, there is someone, everybody has some kind of superpower. And it's like letting people operate in that and having the respect to let them do that in the project and move it forward. And there was a whole, so that really wraps up the five values, which again is communication, simplicity, feedback, courage, and respect. And any one of these could be an episode, I feel like. Maybe we'll do one in future times. He wraps up the chapter with saying, like, this list isn't exhaustive. The important thing is that your team is aligned on core values, and maybe these aren't your core values. And he lists some other good core values, such as safety, security, predictably, predictability, quality of life. These are all really good episodes. I feel like that could be an episode in itself. So really that wraps up the chapter. And there's a quote here that JP wrote down that I think is a good kind of wrap up to this whole chapter, which is values don't provide concrete advice about what to do in software development. Because of the distance between values and practices, we need a way to bridge the gap between them. Principles are the tool we need. And that kind of leads us into what our next episode is going to be about, which is all about the principles that help us implement these values in our day to day. So that's going to be awesome. Do you have any picks for us this week, JP?
Yeah, I have a quick pick, and it's a concept, actually. It's pair code review sessions. And the reason I'm picking this is because someone from our SF office had a huge PR that needed visibility in the LA office, and no one wanted to touch this thing with a 10-foot pole. It was like a 4,000 line diff. It implemented so many things, and he pinged our team on Slack and was like, hey, can I get some eyes on this? Like, I'd be willing to, like, pair code review. And I was like, that sounds interesting. I've never done that before. And it was so cool because basically what happens is he ran me through how he implemented it. And so it was a much more logical jump going from file to file instead of like a linear scan. It was like, okay, we're going to look at this file next and we're going to look at this file. This is how I implemented this. And it just made going through his code a lot easier than having like to just do it myself without any context. And so I think this plays well into our episode, which is all about like communication and feedback, which are two things that we were able to like give each other right away, because I would be like, oh, hey, how come you did it this way? And he'd be like, oh, I actually did it because XYZ. And I was like, oh, okay, that actually makes a ton of sense.
So what was the format for that? Did you sit in like a Slack screen share and talk through the GitHub? Did you pull down the PR? Who drove? Who listened? What was the format on that?
Yeah, so we were kind of just like, hey, this is kind of the, he was like, this is the first time that I've led one of these. And I was like, this is the first time I've been in one of these.
That's cool.
But basically what we did was we had a screen share and I pulled
who
down.
Who drove? Were you sharing or was he sharing?
No, he drove. He drove.
Okay, cool.
He drove and I looked at the diff and we both had the diffs open and cool. I had it pulled down locally too, so that like jumping from file to file was
more
simulating more of like how I would look at code like on screen, which I think is also a good tip. But yeah, it was just really good because I was able to like give feedback and it was a very collaborative process. And I think collaborative code review is really cool. It's like pair programming, but like you're reviewing the code, which
that's interesting,
which was a new concept to me, but I thought it was really valuable.
I've never done that before either. That's why I was like asking for specifics on it. And then did you capture that in any way, or was he just kind of making notes for himself and then came back and submitted a new PR on it? Or did you guys like surface that to the team at all?
No. So what happened was we would like discuss something. If I'd ask for clarity, he'd be like, oh, this is why this is this way. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. I just didn't know that because I didn't have enough context. But if we decided like, oh, hey, we should do something like this, right then and there, I just typed it out as like a comment on the PR, to request changes.
Cool.
And it was so good. He was like, he was really good about stepping back and being like, okay, no, this is right. And having the courage to be like, oh, well, he was like challenging me too at the same time and saying like, hey, well, do you think that if it was done a different way, it would be more valuable? And I would be like, you know what? You're right. Like this is fine the way it is. So yeah, I thought in the spirit of this chapter, it seemed like a good pick.
Awesome. Very cool. My pick this week is a new book from Basecamp that's totally free and it's hosted on their website. It's Shape Up is the name of the book. It's basecamp.com/shapeup. And it's cool because they just built a website and that's the book. It's really well implemented. I'm through like chapter 3. I'm totally loving it. I like everything they write, maybe to a fault. But what's cool about it is it's all about the actual process of how Basecamp gets their work done. So they don't really do Scrum or Agile or Waterfall. They have their kind of own version here. But there's a lot of good stuff in this book for regardless of your context. If you're an independent developer or you only work with one other person versus a large team, there's definitely really good little nuggets about how they work and it's really well documented. And they even have like an example of a project moving through in different phases and they like show screenshots from their Basecamp about like how they executed the work. I'm really a big fan of the book so far, and I would encourage you to check it out. Everything they do is very thoughtful and well-written, and this, again, comes from like a very fresh place. Their work styles are so different. especially because they're a remote organization. I feel like I pay extra special attention to the types of things that they do because it oftentimes really applies to my day to day. So that's my pick. I haven't read the whole thing yet. It's at basecamp.com/shapeup, but I know it's going to be great. I'm already loving it. I've already gotten so much great stuff out of it. So yeah, I'd encourage you to go ahead and check that out. It'll be like out for like 3 weeks by the time you hear this. So sorry if you've already kind of seen this link being shared around.
Cool. Yeah, I love the subtitle. Stop running in circles and ship work that matters. That really resonates with. I think that resonates with this whole episode too. It sort of ties it up in a nice, neat little bow.
Yeah, and honestly, so many reading this book in the context of extreme programming, like so many of these values and principles are very much wrapped in what they do, but they implement in such a different way because they don't use like an agile or scrum system. So it's really different. But anyway, that's the episode for this week. Thanks everyone so much for listening. We're so happy to have you. Next week, we will be jumping into principles of extreme programming, jumping off from values. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you guys next episode.
See ya.